Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on breach of contract right after this. You know, in Leviticus 19:19, it tells us that you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Well, hybrid seed and genetically modified organisms are a crime. They violate the law of God. Now, a study from Cornell University says an increasingly popular commercial corn, genetically engineered to produce a bacterial toxin to protect it against corn pests, has an unwanted side effect. Its pollen kills monarch butterflies and butterfly larvae in laboratory tests. Now, the questions that Cornell left unanswered are even more telling. What else does it kill? Surely butterflies aren't the only unintended victims here. Poisons, after all, aren't too picky. Does it cause mutations? And if so, what plants, animals, or insects are affected? When do you know if you're eating it? Is it in your grits? Is it in your cornbread? We know it turned up in Taco Bell tortillas. And if it's in a food product, will it be labeled as containing genetically modified organisms, also known as GMOs? Will stores pull those products from the shelves like they did with tortillas after they got caught, or will they just ignore the problem and look the other way? Well, so far, our government, our Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration, the multinational seed, petrochemical, and the food processing corporations have ignored all of the critics of agricultural biotech who want the government to at least require labeling that food with GMO labels. Now, in this battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of the multinational seed and food processing companies, you lose unless you have your own non-hybrid, open-pollinated seed that is not genetically modified. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. You can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Then go to our archives page and you can download that. All right, we've been talking about breach of contract. Breach of contract is pretty serious as a matter of law. It gets us into a lot of trouble. Here in the scripture, we have a lot of trouble described to us. If you want to know where the trouble and the breach of contract chapters are, get your pen and paper out here, and I'll give them to you right quickly. It starts in Leviticus 26, so that's a whole chapter there, Leviticus chapter 26, penal clause chapter. Leviticus chapter 28, excuse me, that's Deuteronomy chapter 28. Go over two more books, Deuteronomy chapter 28. Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, whole chapter, penal clause. In the New Testament, it's in Matthew 24, one whole chapter there. The disciples came up to the Messiah and said, hey, tell us the story, tell us what it's going to be like at the end of the age, the end of the world. Mark 13 and Luke 21 are parallel chapters. They tell you the same story, but they add a little bit more to it. So that's Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Now, the whole book of Revelation revolves around this story that we see in these five penal clause chapters. So the book of Revelation, then, is a revealing. It's not a hiding or a sealing up or a mystery there. It's actually a revelation, and it says it's a revelation, but it's written in code so that you can't understand it. And Daniel gives us a key to the code when he says to Big Mike, you know, he says, hey, tell me the story here. This is Daniel chapter 12, about verse 9. He says, hey, tell me what this is all about. And Big Mike told him, he says, nope, ain't telling. He said, many shall run to and fro, knowledge shall be increased. And he says, the wise shall understand, but the wicked shall not understand. They'll do wickedly and they won't understand. So wickedness now is the violation of the law. Those that don't practice the law, the wicked, will not understand, but those that do practice the law will understand. So if you want to be one of the wise guys and understand how this game's being played out, then you need to practice the law. By practicing the law, it'll take you out of breach of contract and take you out of harm's way at the same time. Now, God tells us, he says, I don't take any pleasure in the death of the wicked. So if you take a look at Noah's flood, and you take a look at Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark was not built to save people alive. Noah's Ark was built to save some people alive. The purpose for the flood was an object lesson, and the flood itself was for the purpose of killing all those wicked people, which God said I didn't take any particular joy in, but it's a job that needs to be done, and I'm going to go do it. Now, we're in the same kettle of fish, the same breach of contract today that we were back in the days of Noah's flood. Those people were in breach of contract, and now there's going to be an execution, a penal penalty clause executed for that breach of contract. We're facing the same thing today. It's called the Great Tribulation, the end of the age, the end of the world, second coming. There's a number of labels that are hung upon this period of time that spans about one generation. In fact, the Messiah said, this generation shall not pass until all these things come to pass. Generation is 40 years. What our problem is today is we don't know when it begins and when it ends. So I can't tell you where we're at in the process over here. But in Matthew 24, he said, read the signs of the times. Pay attention to what you're hearing on the Lair News Hour. Pay attention to what you're seeing, earthquakes in diverse places. And you got famines and droughts coming up here and there. You see a huge world population faced with extinction. And the capacity to annihilate all life from off the planet, which he said, if I don't come back and intervene, no flesh would be saved alive. We're living in that age. We're living in that time. Knowledge has been increased. Many are running to and fro. 90% of all the scientists that have ever lived are alive right now. It's been that way for the last 50 or 75 years. Knowledge is being increased exponentially. I mean, we're getting smarter and smarter and more technologically advanced with every passing day. And it's leading us closer and closer to that final, last Armageddon, armed Megiddo. That great battle, the last great battle called the Battle of Megiddo, in which it is said that the blood will flow to as high as the horse's bridle. Boy, that's a bunch of blood. That's a bunch of dead people. And there's going to be a battle fought there of 200 million soldiers, 200 million people. That's a big army. So tuck that one away in your heart as we go forward here, looking at the breach of contract so that we can identify the 82 common violations, 133 laws. We've got 82 of them that we as a nation are not in compliance with, and that's what I'm talking about here. We're generally out of compliance with these laws, some to a greater degree than others. All right, last time we finished with tattoos, number 36. Number 37, wage theft. You'll see that in Deuteronomy 24, verses 14 through 16. We are suffering from wage theft, and if you're an employer, you're stealing from your employees. And that's because your employees need to be paid at the end of every day, daily. And you only pay them once a week, twice a month, or maybe even once a month. When I worked, when I first started working on the ranch, we got paid once a month, the 15th of the month. We were supposed to be paid at the end of every day because we were wage earners. We weren't. We didn't complain. There's a second way where we are robbing our employees, and that is we're paying them with paper. And when we pay with paper, those are unjust weights and balances. Our employees need to be paid in gold coin, and they need to be paid at the end of every day. And I didn't write that law, so don't get mad at me. I just want to report it to you. It's in Deuteronomy 24, verses 14 through 16. Let's see what it says. Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 24. Verses 14 through 16. So I'll get one more page here. You shall not oppress a hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of your brethren or the strangers that are in your land within your gates. At his day you shall give him his hire, neither shall the sun go down upon it, because he is poor and sets his heart upon it, lest he cry against you unto the eternal, and it shall be sin against you. That's just one of many statutes that tell you that a wage earner has to be paid at the end of every day before the sun goes down. You'll see that in the parable of the vineyard, where the guy goes out and he hires the guys, and at the end of the day when he gets finished, he lines them all up and he pays them at the end of the day. You'll see that in the New Testament, so that all you Christians out there know that you can listen to that because it's in the New Testament. See, most people, they don't want to follow the Old Testament, but they claim to follow the New. Truth of the matter is, if they're not following the Old Testament, they're not following the New either, which is why the Messiah asked the rhetorical question, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say, such as, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth, and think not that I've come to abolish the law of the prophets. I didn't. I came to fulfill them. And if you teach anybody out there to violate one of these least commandments, I'll call you least in the kingdom. All right, so with that one out of the way, let's take a look at number 38. Polygamy is outlawed. Polygamy. The one thing that the Mormons had right was polygamy. In fact, there's a new article out here. You might want to read this. It's in the February issue, 2010, of the National Geographic magazine concerning polygamy in the United States. There's about 30,000 polygamous families here in the United States. 30,000. They don't belong to the Mormon church. They belong to an offshoot of the Mormon church. And the upshot of it is that polygamy is growing, and it's getting along quite well, and everything's going along fine. One guy asks a prosecutor, well, since that's a felony, how come you're not out prosecuting these people? And he says, well, it's not as easy as you think. But he doesn't tell him the answer, and the answer is in the marriage license. It's just simple like this. We learned that in Reynolds versus U.S., remember? And the Murray, Utah policeman, we've been talking about that a little bit. So the Mormons were not breaking the law of God. They were violating the law of their God, the United States of America, but they were not violating the law of the Creator God, the Creator of the universe. There are 24 cases of polygamy in Scripture. 1 Samuel 30, verse 18 is an example of it. But there are 24 of these examples of polygamy. In fact, God himself gave David, Saul's wives, plural. David had 6 wives. Nobody complained in the Scripture. God never complained about David practicing polygamy, something wicked and evil. Jacob had 4 wives. Nobody complained about Jacob. Now, there are some cases of polygamy where God did upbraid somebody. Solomon was one, multiplying wives to himself. But polygamy is a social status created by God himself. So, we in America have outlawed a God-ordained program. And that's against the law to do that. Remember, God said, don't add to the law, don't take away from it. But I told you that polygamy is acceptable. Not necessarily good for you, but acceptable. Because it's an extraordinary use in marriage. It is not something common or ordinary, and not everybody practices it. But the fact that there are 24 cases in the Scripture, and it's a social status created by God, to run around telling people not to do that is a crime. And that's exactly what we're doing. Number 39, crossbreeding animals. This is very common. Crossbreeding not only is common, but we're getting to the point now where we're cloning. And we're even doing better than that. We're taking animals and we're crossing them with vegetables and coming up with new forms of life that hadn't existed before. Now, isn't that just real special? Not quite creating life, but we're creating new forms of life, which we were told, don't do that. It's in Leviticus 19, verse 19, where we're told not to let our cattle gender with a diverse kind. Now, breeding cattle with cattle isn't against the law. It's just a bad breeding practice, but breeding cattle with other types, such as buffalo with cattle produces beefalo, it can be done, but that doesn't mean it ought to. Sheep and goats ought not to be bred together, but they can. We do. And we're told not to do that with specificity. And we do it. And we love it. We just get right after it, don't we? Okay, well, now there's a penalty there. And that's it gets even worse than that. The scientists that are involved at Monsanto can honestly say, well, I didn't know anything about Leviticus 19:19. But all you preachers out there, you knew better. And you should have been telling your parishioners, don't buy those products from those companies that produce these hybridized forms of life. And you're not doing that, are you? All right, number 40, draft or military conscription. Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, prohibits it. This thing of being drafted into the military, let's go over to Deuteronomy 24, verse 5. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife, which he has taken. Now, that's one statute out of many that deal with this thing of the draft. It is not against the law to go to war. But under the war statute concerning war in the Bible, you can only go to war when God authorizes it. God himself has to authorize it. And there's a series of steps that we go through to do that. Fighting these wars and going to war for the United States, it may be commendable and people love it. they just get right after it. But it's against the law to do that. So all you people involved in the military, well, it's not against the law to be a soldier. It's just against the law to be a soldier in a foreign and alien army. God on numerous occasions raised an army and went out and used it. Killed a lot of people. But to be a soldier in a foreign and alien army is a mercenary. And a mercenary is in opposition to his creator. The creator says, you shall have no other gods before me. So military life is pretty much out of the question. So if you wanted a military career, I thought about that when I was a youngster. I went down to the army recruiter and I told him, I said, I want to join the army. I want to join for 30 years. I want to become a general. I think I was 18 years old. And he said, well, you can join the army, but you can't join the army for 30 years. You can only join for no more than 6. You got to join one hitch at a time. That's called a hitch. And so if you want to serve for 30 years, you're going to have to do it 5 times in 5 equal installments. So, okay, I think I can handle it. Then he said, you have to go to West Point if you want to be a general. Otherwise, you can only make a lieutenant colonel. That's as high as you can go if you're going to go to officer's candidate school. And I thought, well, that's not such a good idea, at least in my view. And I said, well, how much am I going to get paid for doing this? And it was $69 a month. And if once you become an officer, you got $235 a month, but now you got to pay for your own housing, and you got to pay for your own uniforms. And I said, sir, I already make $300 a month now, and board and room, and I am buying my own clothes and so on. And so I said, I don't think that you've got a very good program here. And he said, well, you better join right now, because if you don't, we're going to draft you into the Army. We're going to draft you. So I said, well, why don't you just come after me, because I'm not going to join. And so as it turned out, they never did draft me. And I got caught between the Korean War and the Vietnam War. But when the Korean War was on, I was too young, and when the Vietnam War was on, I was too old, and so it didn't affect me. But I'm not a conscientious objector. I'm not telling you, you know, that you couldn't serve in war. World War II came along, and that was about as close to an authorized war as you can get. The Japanese did attack us, and if you'll notice, it was God that really worked on our side, especially at the Battle of Midway, and the turning point in the Pacific, Battle of Midway. God himself was in on that deal, which tells me that that probably was pretty close to an authorized war. But in any event, you have to take an oath of office in order to accomplish this. You've got to sign a contract with a foreign and alien god, step forward, raise your right hand, swear an oath. Both of those activities are prohibited. So, that being the case then, military services draft and military conscription is a violation of the law of God. Let's take mortgage credit number 41. Go to Deuteronomy 15, verses 1 through 3. This is very common. People go out, and actually, they use the term shopping for a mortgage. I'm shopping for a crime. I'm out here looking diligently to find out how I can break the law. And that's what shopping for a mortgage is all about. And a mortgage has an interest requirement. Borrowing money is not against the law. Paying the interest on it, that's what's against the law. So here in Deuteronomy 15, verses 1 through 3, at the end of every 7 years, you shall make a release. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lends out unto his neighbor shall release it. And he shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother, because it's called the Lord's release. Of a foreigner you may exact it again, but that which is yours with your brother, thine hand shall release. Now in Leviticus chapter 25, there's a whole chapter there that deals with land Sabbaths and Jubilees and the year of release and the Jubilee release. And then they tie in with this thing of interest or bond servitude. And many of these laws that come together, they work together, and there'll be three or four of them at a time. The year of release, the Jubilee, credit, all work together. And at the end of 6 years, in the seventh year, you've got to be free unbought. So if you're a bondservant, if you've sold yourself into bondage, then your master has to release you. This is why we used to have a program in Anglo-Saxon administration that we called an apprenticeship. So you apprentice yourself for 4 years, and you become a journeyman. And then when you finish your journeyman, you become a master. You'd be a master mechanic, a master blacksmith, master carpenter. In the Army, they call them master sergeants. And they become masters because they're now skilled in that particular trade or that skill, that occupation. All right, so anyway, this mortgage credit, Leviticus 25, Deuteronomy 15, 1 through 3, this year of release and Jubilee, they all come together. We don't practice any of that in this country. Once we have indebted you into a mortgage, we're going to keep you there forever. We call it credit debt slavery. Credit debt slavery. Number 42, the dishonoring of your parents by public schools. See this in Exodus 20, verse 12, where it prohibits dishonoring your parents. Well, when you send children to public school, and your parents are the cause of this problem, they sent you to public school, and the public school has an agenda, and that's to alienate you from your parents and to bond you to the civil law state. It's to divorce you from the Ten Commandments and bond you to the Ten Planks. And it works like a shot. It's worked this way for thousands of years. It never fails. Never fails. And so what we're doing here is violating the law of God by dishonoring parents by using the public school. And the public school teachers are telling you very plainly, if your parents aren't following these laws, rules, and regulations, you report them to me. And I'll report them to Social Lady. Social Lady will remove you from that bad environment and will continue training you in the way that you should go. Well, the Fifth Commandment has a death penalty associated with it. And we as children, when we're children, are bound and bonded to our parents. They have the power of life and death over us. They should train us up in the way that we should go. And then when we're old, we won't depart from it. That's the instruction that they get. And if we carried that out generation after generation, you wouldn't have children slapping their parents and abusing their parents, talking back to their parents, and so on. I see this very often. Children are disrespectful. They're not taught to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, or yes, sir, and no, sir. They don't respect their parents. They talk back to them. They get physically violent with them, especially when they're just a little kid, five-year-old kid, throws himself on the floor, hits his mother, yells at her and screams and cries and one thing and another. It's actually the parents' fault for allowing it, but it's a crime. And as this child grows up, he gets to be 15 or 20, he doesn't change his behavior. And so the penalty for that is death. This dishonoring of parents, then, is a crime that goes on in America. It's endemic here. All right, now we got three that go in a row, 43, 44, and 45. Write those three down and put the Ten Commandments at 43. The Bible is banned, number 44, and prayer is banned from school. That's number 45. Those three will go together. There are three separate statutes here. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 6 and just read a couple of verses here. Listen to this. Deuteronomy chapter 6, as it relates to the Ten Commandments here, he says, "Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments, which the Eternal your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you go in to possess it, and you, or that you your mightiest fear, your mightiest rather fear, the Lord your God, to keep all of his statutes, all of his commandments, which I command you, you and your son's son, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. So if you want to have a long life, if you'll practice this law, he'll give you a long life. And then secondly, if you don't, then the opposite is true, isn't it? Short life. Take a look at sodomites. They're dying at age 39 with AIDS, 45 from hepatitis and other diseases. See, they're in violation of the law. It's a capital felony. They don't live to be 70. Only 1% of sodomites live to be 70. 99% of them die before. The average lifespan is 45 unless they die from AIDS or some related disease, and then it's age 39. Now, there's a cause and effect relationship there. Number one, you got a physical law that says don't do that. Then you have a physical penalty called STDs, that's sexually transmitted diseases. It doesn't require a policeman. I don't have to go out there and give you a ticket. You know, we don't have to lock you up in prison, do Jack Daly squat. But you need to be told so that you can make an intelligent decision. And one of my complaints is that the preachers don't tell anybody anything. They're out there preaching and beating their gums, and they don't say anything at the end of the day. There is some specific information that all of us need. And, you know, then once you get the information, you're an adult, and you can take the information and do with it as you please. But somebody ought to at least walk up to you and tell you, you know, you're 8, 10, 12 years old. Listen, honor your father and mother, that it may be well with you, so that you don't die at an early age. If you want to live to be old and full of years, do not slap your mother. Don't talk back to your father. I tested it a couple of times with my dad. He didn't care much for me talking back to him, and he let me know that. And I think I did it once, maybe twice. And if I did it twice, and I was brain dead between the first and second times, because my dad, he had a very powerful teaching tool called a belt. God, that thing hurt. But I learned from it. I learned. We'll come up with, and we'll talk about dishonoring your parents. We're coming up to corporal punishment here in a little bit. There's something to be said here about corporal punishment from the Scripture. I think you'll be amazed when you see it. Hey, it's the midway point, and I got to give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download it right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. All right, and then these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about breach of contract. The breach of contract, 82 crimes that we're committing here as a nation. Some of them not quite as severe as others. For instance, the blood statute over there, as a general rule, we Americans don't eat very much blood. We still bleed our animals. Now, we're not totally in compliance there because we make blood sausage, and we don't kasher or kosher our meat, which we ought to be doing, but we don't. Some people do. But it's not a common practice. It's done by a minority of people. And the thing of using blasphemy or refusing to mention God in our public gatherings and prayers, using hybrid seed, practicing Halloween, practicing false prophecy, income tax, flushing our sewage down the rivers, tattooing ourselves, the wage theft. You know, these are things that are common, and we're doing these as a general rule in the nation. Tattoo parlors are everywhere. And it's not that everybody practices tattooing, but it's a growing phenomenon, and women are doing it more and more. We got a national sin here. At least the government ought not to be licensing it. I mean, if people are practicing that, you know, that's a crime, but they're doing it individually. When government licenses people to go out and do that, then they're putting their seal of approval on a criminal activity that we're told not to do. Same thing's true with pork. You know, a guy might go out here and kill a coon, bring it in, eat it. That's a rare personal or family sin. But when you go out here and you raise pigs in a commercial environment, license these operations, and then build slaughterhouses that kills 32,000 pigs and then put it out on the meat shelf for everybody to buy, you have institutionalized a criminal behavior, a criminal practice that is prohibited by law. And we do it in a way that forms blasphemy or creates blasphemy because we know better. We know better, or we should know better. There are more Bibles in America than there are people. Everybody's got one. And if you don't have one, it's in the top drawer of your motel. You know, next time you're on the road traveling, open the top drawer of your dresser in the motel, there'll be a Bible in there. The Gideons put them in there. So the idea that we're ignorant and we don't know or we can't know isn't going to carry you very far. Ignorance of the law, remember, is no excuse. The guy that's really ultimately responsible for this lack of knowledge is the preacher. He's the guy who should be telling you this, and he's not. You shouldn't have to get this information from a general contractor or a plumber, for crying out loud. Now, polygamy should be explained by the preacher. It's not a common practice, but let me explain it. And the nation as a whole ought not to be condemning people for practicing polygamy. In fact, you people that are practicing polygamy have finally awakened to the fact that it's the marriage license that's causing you your problem. Second thing is you're going down signing up for welfare and food stamps. If you're going to have five wives, you should be supporting the five wives, not asking me to. All right, let's try another one over here. So we got dishonoring of parents in public schools. Now, this Ten Commandments over here, Deuteronomy 6, he says, I want you to practice my law. We don't do that. We've replaced that with the 10-plank model. The Bible, the scripture is banned. Well, listen, there's a statute here in Deuteronomy 29, verses 20 through 28. Let me just flip over here quickly. A little short story over here that deals with what we've done. We've taken the Bible itself, the scripture, and we have banned the book. It's just literally against the law for you to use this book. One of these days, I think it's going to be outlawed. It hasn't been yet. You know, you can still just talk about it, and you can still read from it and so on. But I think pretty shortly it's going to be banned, period. But it is banned from our public institutions. And listen to this, starting in verse 20. He says, the Eternal will not spare him, but then the anger of the Eternal and his jealousy shall smoke against that man, and all the curses that are written in this book shall lie upon him. And the Eternal will blot his name out from under heaven. And the Eternal shall separate him in unto evil out of all the tribes of Israel, according to all the curses of the covenant that are written in this book of the law. So that the generation to come of your children that shall rise up after you, you know, the heirs and assigns forever, that's us today, and the stranger that shall come from a far land, that's all you Chinese and Vietnamese and you Mexicans, all you strangers, shall say when they see the plagues of that land and the sickness which the Eternal has laid upon it, and that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, that it is not sown nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, and the Eternal, which the Eternal overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. That reminds me of that oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, which is in the process of consuming that beautiful land down there and destroying it. I wouldn't be surprised but what the finger of God is in on that deal, and that we're going to pay a penalty for that. It looks like that's what it sounds like right here. Listen to that. The whole land thereof is brimstone and salt. Do you know what that oil is going to do to those marshes down there? It's going to destroy them. Wait until you see that thing when it's been destroyed. Now he says in verse 24, even all nations shall say, wherefore has the Eternal done this unto this land? What meaneth the heat of his great anger? When men shall say, because they have forsaken the covenant, remember that breach of contract? The covenant, the contract. When we have forsaken the contract of the Eternal, of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them forth out of the land of Egypt. Our God made a contract with our fathers that inures to the heirs and the sons. Here's the story right here. And it's in Deuteronomy 29, verses 20 through 28. Now we have a written copy of the contract. I'm reading it to you. This is a part of the contract. For they went and served other gods, that's the United States, California, New York, and they worshiped them. You obeyed them. You buckled your seatbelt and drove 55. You obey the God of the United States, but you will not obey the God of your fathers, whom they knew not and whom he had not given unto them. God has not given us the United States, California, New York to serve, worship, and obey. He told us not to do that. But again, you know, we're smarter than God. So in verse 27, he says, the anger of the Eternal was kindled against this land to bring upon it all the curses that are written in this book. That's why at the beginning here I gave you the list. Remember, it's Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Revelation 6, Revelation 18. I'll give you a couple more. And these are the penal statutes to the contract. And in verse 28, the Eternal rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation and cast them into another land as it is this day. All right, so now go to Deuteronomy 28, verse 68, and he tells you, I'm going to cast you out of the land, and I'm going to, the Eternal shall bring you again into Egypt, wherewith by ships, by the way, whereof I spoke unto you, you shall see it no more again, and there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. Remember all that great debt, $100 trillion worth of debt? We get sold for that. Just in case you were wondering, you, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America, are the collateral. You're called a resource, a human resource. And then you'll be bought, sold, and traded like cattle, because no man shall buy you, because the 13th Amendment's a collateral estoppel to private ownership of people. Bond servitude, remember, has been abolished. Now everybody belongs to the state. You got a birth certificate and a marriage license. You got citizenship. And when the state goes bankrupt, you'll be sold for the debt. I've been wondering what the Chinese have up their sleeve. I'm not quite sure that I know, but I'm suspicious that it's human resource. I think that's the collateral for that $1 trillion worth of government debt. We'll find out as we progress along here. All right, now, the third one here in this little triumphant, Ten Commandments, Bible is banned. Now, prayer is banned from our schools. Now, let's go to Proverbs chapter 28, Proverbs, the book of wisdom. And then there's just one quick little statement over here that deals with this thing of prayer being banned from our schools. And our Supreme Court banned prayer. There was a case came down. I forgot the name of it exactly. But Proverbs 28, verse 9, here's what your Creator has to say about you banning prayer from your public schools and your public institutions. He said, he that turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer shall be an abomination. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, there's a little foible prophecy in here. Let me see if I can find it here for you. 1 Samuel chapter 8, in which God says, here's what's going to come down. In verse 18, he says, you're going to cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you. That's President Obama. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day. This socialist communist president you have elected, that God told you, hey, rethink this. This isn't very good on your part. And we elected him anyway. We said, nevertheless, we'll have a king. He says, you're going to cry out to me in that day. When this guy gets through with your health care insurance program and he gets through with your socialization and he bankrupts your nation and merges you into this new world order, you're going to cry out to God in that day. And he just told you. And he says, I will not hear you. Even our prayers are an abomination. And that's because we banned prayer, banned the Bible, and banned the Ten Commandments from our public institutions. We did so with a logical reason, remember? We said, well, we got all these Buddhists in here, you know, and we got Jews and all these other people, and, you know, we got to respect their beliefs and their religions and so on. No, we didn't, and we were told not to. You didn't have to, and you were told not to. And now the stranger that's within your gate is rising up high above you and bringing you down very low. Now, that's what God told you was going to happen, and you didn't listen. And so there's a penalty that comes out of that. Penalties. And that's what the penal clause to the contract is all about. And that's why when you see unemployment at 9.9% and outsourcing and the loss of jobs being shipped overseas at the rate of 8 million now, I think was the number, you got 8 million people out of unemployed, and you've shipped 8 million jobs overseas. Now you're bringing in all these aliens, so you can't close your borders off. You can't protect your borders. And you've got around 20 million of these aliens. The government tells you you got about 10, but it's closer to 20. And these 20 million aliens in the country are costing you $2 trillion a year. This is why you're going broke. You can't afford to support all of these uneducated aliens. And then some guy comes on and says, well, all these aliens, though, they're paying taxes. Yeah, they pay a dollar in tax, and then they collect $2 in benefits. Boys and girls, you know, people that are earning under $20,000 a year don't pay taxes in this country. $20,000 is the poverty level. In fact, if you're earning under $20,000 a year, you get an income tax credit. You get a check. Government sends you a check from those that are paying taxes. And then those that are documented are entitled to all of the benefits, and those that are undocumented still use the benefits that are out there, like the public highways and the public schools. An undocumented alien with three children puts his three kids in the public schools. The three children in public schools cost over $30,000 a year to educate. That guy's not paying $30,000 a year in taxes. He didn't pay any taxes at all. So when I hear somebody say, well, these aliens are paying taxes, you know, you people aren't paying attention to reality here. You're listening to your preachers and politicians again. Your preachers and politicians are lying to you. That's number one. And number two, even your common sense is lying to you. You haven't got your common sense working. now do a series of programs here, and I'll show you about this illegal immigration in the United States and what it's doing to you, because God himself says, this is what I'm going to do to you. If you want to know why all these illegals are coming in here, it's God Almighty himself working against you. He said, the stranger that's within your gate will rise up above you and bring you down very low. That's not a good guess. That's somebody that has the power to bring all these aliens in here, put them over us, and bring us down very low. It's being done by God himself. Now, that's a punishment. That's a penalty. And you can pass all the laws you want in Arizona. I mean, you know, nice guys, good laws, good idea. You got the right, you're on the right track, you got the right idea. But you're still in breach of contract, and it isn't going to help you a whole lot, because in the final analysis, you're working against your creator. If you think you can write a law in Arizona and ban these aliens from coming in here, well, you know, good luck. You know, as they say, good luck. The creator of the universe is telling you, this is God, this is the Elohim, Emmanuel, you know, the mighty one, Allah, Jesus, you know, whatever name you want to hang on him. This is the guy, the grand poobah. And then he says, hey, listen, now here's my agenda, here's what I'm telling you. Now pay attention. We're not. And so there's the penalty, penal clause. That's what we're paying here. Now let's take a look at lethal injection. I got three more here. Lethal injection, corporal punishment, and then the holy days. Have you noticed here in the United States how we kill people? When we want to execute somebody, we say to them, okay, well, we're going to give you a lethal injection, gash you, hang you, or electrocute you. But in Genesis 9, verse 6, there's a statute. And the statute says that a murderer has to have his blood shed. And there's a number of other scriptures that tell you essentially the same thing, but there can be no forgiveness of sin without the shedding of blood. No forgiveness of sin without the shedding of blood. And so we here refuse to shed blood. Lethal injection doesn't do it, gas doesn't do it, electrocution doesn't do it, and hanging doesn't do it. Now in Utah, one state, you can elect to be shot. That'll draw blood. So what we're saying, in effect, is that we will never forgive you. Now, you know, the Messiah said here in the New Testament, he said he required us to forgive our enemies 70 times 7. Forgiveness is a part and parcel with the program. And if you don't forgive your brother his trespass, God says, I won't forgive you yours either. It's incumbent upon us. It is necessary that these people be killed. No two ways about it. The law requires it. A murderer. There's 24 categories of crime. God tells us, hey, I want you to kill these people for these crimes. In fact, that of it by itself is a crime. The fact that we as a nation will not stone these people to death is a crime of and by itself. And so when we're told to stone these people to death, and then we say, no, God, that's a mistake. We're not going to stone them. We're going to do something else. That's giving God the finger. Then he says, I want you to forgive these people, and you forgive them by shedding their blood. And then it's all over. Nope, we're not going to forgive them. we're going to kill them, and we're going to leave their blood in their veins. Well, then that's just adding a little insult to injury, and that's just adding more fuel to the fire on this breach of contract, which comes back and bites us in the butt. Bottom line. So tuck that one away in your heart. Genesis 9, verse 6. Corporal punishment. Proverbs 13, verse 24. Remember, we're talking about this kid in the store slapping his mother and beating on her, you know, one thing and another. And it's actually the parent's fault for not disciplining the child. But obviously, parent hates the child. How do I know that? Well, take a look at Proverbs 13, verse 24, where it says, he that spares his rod hates his son, but he that loves him chastens him betimes, which gives rise to this old adage that says, spare the rod, spoil the child. Well, hey, listen, boys and girls, God told you that when you got a kid over here, you're to raise the child up and teach him this law. And part of this law, it's a legal education, is that when you break the law, when mom and dad say, come here, go there, stand up, sit down, that's the law. And when the child disobeys, then he has to be punished. He has to be instructed. And along with instruction comes punishment, carrot and stick. And when you fail or refuse to administer corporal punishment, what you're saying, in effect, is, I hate this kid. So here you've got parents whose children are slapping them, hitting them, yelling and screaming and making a big scene, a big mess. And you wonder why the kid's doing that. The child is reacting to the parent because the parent first hated the child and refused to chasten him betimes. Cause and effect relationship. Then later on, this kid grows up. He's 19 years old. He slaps his mother around, kicks his dad, punches his old man out. They call this parental abuse. Well, parental abuse comes from parents who hate their children, who in turn grow up to hate their parents and then treat them in a way that violates the fifth commandment, cause and effect. The last one for today here is the holy days. In Leviticus chapter 23, there are seven annual holy days. Remember, we talked about Sabbath earlier. That's every 7 days. Well, these seven annual holy days, we were told to observe. We don't do that. And that's Sabbath breaking. And Sabbath breaking has a penalty, and the penalty is national captivity, national captivity. So when you hear me say the United States is going into national captivity, and I suspect you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders are going right with us. And that's because that's the penalty throughout history that God has always applied to us when we broke the Sabbath. I don't think it's going to be any different this time around. That isn't going to be fun. You German people over there, how'd you like it when the Russians came in there and took over and started directing operations? I mean, if you thought Hitler was bad, you didn't see nothing until Joe Stalin came in and took over, did you? So the Japanese, how'd you Japanese people over there over in Okinawa to this day, you know, you've still got military occupation. You got the Yankees there. And you got us Americans over there directing your government and telling you when to come in, when to go out. It's been like that for 60 years, hasn't it? Well, now, you just take a look at what we did to the Japs and the Germans and then ask yourself, well, what's that going to be like when the Chinese and the Russians do that to us? Now, it's not going to be for 60 years, but it's going to be for a time, and they're going to kill as many people as they can get their hands on. In fact, this New World Order trick over here calls for the annihilation of 90% of the people on planet Earth, and God himself picks that very same number in Isaiah 6, verse 13, when he says, I'm going to save a tithe of you alive. So you've got the New World Order crowd, and they're telling you they're going to kill 90%, and you got God says, well, that's the right number, because I'm going to save 10% of you alive. That's bad news, and that's the Great Tribulation, and that's got a cause and effect relationship, and with us, it has to do with our breach of contract. The sooner you get back to practicing the deal, then the sooner you can get back to collecting your benefits and the more confidence you can have that you can survive this coming Great Tribulation. In fact, I mentioned this to you, I think, last time in Revelation 3:10. A specific statute that says, if you practice this law, I will protect you from the Great Tribulation. That's Revelation 3, verse 10. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.